The knockout punch came from nowhere. Mr. T-Bone, in a move that even the slickest lawyer would admire, produced documentation. His phone records had been smuggled in, and he showed the court in black and white that exactly 54 calls had been made to numbers in Southeast Atlanta. His supporters, by far the majority, but whose loyalty could vanish in an instant, whooped and hollered until T. Carl slammed his plastic gavel and got them quiet. Zorro had trouble regrouping, and his hesitation killed him. He was ordered to immediately turn over the phone to the Brethren within 24 hours and to reimburse Mr. T-Bone $450 for long-distance charges. If 24 hours passed with no phone, the matter would be referred to the warden, along with a finding of fact from the Brethren that Zorro did indeed possess an illegal cell phone. The Brethren further ordered the two to maintain a distance of at least 50 feet from one another at all times, even when eating. T. Carl rapped a gavel, and the crowd began a noisy exit. He called the next case, another petty gambling dispute, and waited for the spectators to leave.
"Quiet!"
he shouted, and the racket only grew louder. The Brethren went back to their newspapers and magazines.
"Quiet!"
he barked again, slamming his gavel.
"Shut up!"
Spicer yelled at T. Carl.
"You're making more noise than they are!" "It's my job!"
T. Carl snapped back, the curls of his wig bouncing in all directions. When the cafeteria was empty, only one inmate remained. T. Carl looked around and finally asked him,
You Mr. Hooten?"
"No, sir," the young man said.
"Are you Mr. Jenkins?"
"No, sir."
"I didn't think so. The case of Hooten versus Jenkins is hereby dismissed for failure to show,"
T. Carl said, and made a dramatic entry into his docket book.
"Who are you?"
Spicer asked the young man, who was sitting alone and glancing around as if he wasn't sure he was welcome. The three men in the pale green robes were now looking at him, as was the clown with the gray wig and the old maroon pajamas and the lavender shower shoes, no socks. Who were these people? He slowly got to his feet and moved forward with great apprehension until he stood before the three.
"I'm looking for some help," he said, almost afraid to speak.
"Do you have business before the court?"
T. Carl growled from the side.
"No, sir."
"Then you'll have to..."
"Shut up,"
Spicer said.
"Court's adjourned. Leave."
T. Carl slammed his docket book, kicked back his folding chair, and stormed out of the room, his shower shoes sliding on the tile, his wig bouncing behind him. The young man appeared ready to cry.
"What can we do for you?"
Yarber asked. He was holding a small cardboard box, and the Brethren knew from experience that it was filled with the papers that had brought him to Trumbull.
"I need some help," he said again. "I got here last week, and my roommate said you guys could help with my appeals."
"Don't you have a lawyer?"
Beach asked.
"I did. He wasn't very good. He's one reason I'm here."
"Why are you here?"
asked Spicer.
"I don't know. I really don't know."
"Did you have a trial?"
"Yes, a long one."
"And you were found guilty by a jury?"
"Yes, me and a bunch of others. They said we were part of a conspiracy."
"A conspiracy to do what?"
"Import cocaine."
"Another druggie." They were suddenly anxious to get back to their letter writing.
"How long is your sentence?"
asked Yarber.
48 years.
48 years?
How old are you?"
23.
The letter writing was momentarily forgotten. They looked at his sad young face and tried to picture it 50 years later. Released at the age of 71, it was impossible to imagine. E.
each of the brethren would leave Trumbull, a younger man than this kid.